we see a Nazi who had been appointed by Nazi Germany to effectuate what the Nazis called the final solution, suddenly brought to court in a Jewish state to be judged. These are images that highlight how the Nazis' quote-unquote final solution was not final at all. These are images that embody the endurance of the Jewish people. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 217, The Judge, the Prosecutor, and the Police Officer. I am Meir Soloveitchik. During the first part of the Eichmann trial in Jerusalem, as the prosecution presented its case and Adolf Eichmann sat in his glass enclosure, there were many memorable individuals that figured in the proceedings. But perhaps the three that stood out the most were the presiding judge, Justice Landau, the chief prosecutor, Israel's Attorney General Gideon Hausner, and a police officer by the name of Michael, or Mickey, Goldman. Goldman was a survivor of the ghetto and of Auschwitz, and was part of the bureau made up of prosecutors and police that were documenting evidence of Eichmann's crime. He was the police officer that we mentioned several episodes before, whose own tattooed number and memory of arrival in Auschwitz helped authenticate documents received by the bureau. As part of the collection of evidence, Goldman heard the account of someone who saw a boy receive 80 lashes in the ghetto. The man giving this account did not know that this boy was Goldman. Goldman told Yad Vashem, quote, "Our conversation was conducted in Hebrew. I asked, 'Prej Mishel Ghetto? What were you called at Prej Mishel Ghetto?' And he answered, 'My name is Dr. Brzezinski.' I asked what he was called in the ghetto, because I could not recall anyone in the ghetto named Dr. Brzezinski. He asked where I was from, and I told him that I was from Prej Mishel as well. He asked for my name, and when he heard it was Goldman, said, 'I knew a boy named Goldman who got 80 lashes from Schwamberger, but we heard later that he died.' I answered, 'He's not dead. He's standing here in front of you.'" End quote. Goldman did not know that this brief conversation would lead to one of the most indelible episodes in the entire trial, and that ultimately one of the most incredible photographs from the proceedings would be an image of himself, an image that highlighted Gideon Hausner's instinct that this was a trial unlike any other. As we have discussed, parts of the trial were marked by tension between Landau and Hausner, with the former seeking proceedings akin to those at Nuremberg, and the latter, Hausner, seeking to also focus on the perspective of the survivors. Hausner's approach was reflected in the many incredible and heartbreaking testimonies presented by witnesses that he, Hausner, brought to the stand. One of these witnesses was the former partisan and writer Abba Kovner. The historian Deborah Lipstadt, in her book on the Eichmann trial, writes, quote, "Kovner had barely left the witness box when there was an unexpected turn of events. Judge Landau turned to Hausner and attacked not just Kovner's testimony, but the entire premise of Hausner's prosecutorial strategy. With undisguised fury, Landau lectured Hausner." End quote. As Lipstadt goes on to describe, the judge asked the prosecutor why this testimony was being presented, and Hausner replied that he would show the court why all this was relevant, with Landau ultimately stopping that session of the court with the words, "We heard your opening address, which it seems to me lays down the general line of what you wish to place before the court." End quote. Of course, had Landau wished, he could, as presiding judge, have stopped many of these testimonies from going forward, but in the end, he did not. As the historian Michal Shaked notes, following the testimony of every one of these witnesses, the lawyer representing Eichmann, the German attorney Robert Servatius, did not choose to cross-examine them. But at one point, Servatius put forward the argument that these testimonies should not be allowed on the grounds of irrelevancy. And Justice Landau issued what was called Intermediate Decision Number 13 that allowed these testimonies to continue. Michal Shaked, in a fascinating article, reflects on why, if the judge disagreed with Hausner's approach, Landau still allowed the testimonies to continue. The judge's decision indicated, Shaked reflects, that, quote, "even while he was working hard to maintain the legal framework, Landau recognized that history was also at stake." And Shaked adds, "I believe that there was a further equally powerful reason for Landau's deviation from the strict legal line that he emphasized in his judgment. He recognized the human and moral obligation to give the victims a voice. The survivors had a need and a right to testify on a legal stage, facing their persecutor, and the court had a duty to enable them, quote unquote, to open their closed hearts on the witness stand," Landau's words in his judgment. "Intuitively," Shaked continues, "Landau knew that the former inmates of ghettos and camps felt an obligation to tell the world what happened, to bear witness. Intermediate decision number 13, therefore, exposed a duality, or perhaps a conflict, in Landau's thinking." End quote. and extricate for the rights. This indicates that, in the end, quote, Landau understood that alongside the legal proceedings taking place in the courtroom, a public event of immeasurable significance was taking place as well, end quote. One event that truly captured the unique nature of the trial occurred when Hausner called to the stand the man who had seen Mickey Goldman whipped in the ghetto. As Goldman later told Yad Vashem, he, Goldman, did not know that this witness had informed Hausner of their exchange, but the witness had told Hausner. And Hausner, not telling Mickey Goldman what would occur, then asked the witness whether the boy that he saw whipped was in the courtroom that day. And before the eyes of all, the witness identified the Israeli police officer that was sitting in the courtroom, Mickey Goldman. Goldman had had no idea this would occur, and he told Yad Vashem that, quote, during the break after Dr. Brzezinski's testimony, Hausner approached me and asked how it was possible that we were sitting together every evening, talking and reading hours and hours of testimony of witnesses that we were going to summon, and that I hadn't told anything about myself. He wondered how it was possible that he should hear this from someone who had entered his office by chance, end quote. In other words, Hausner wanted to know why, if Mickey Goldman was working with the prosecutors to collect testimony from survivors, why he, Goldman, had not told Hausner about his own experiences. Goldman told Yad Vashem that he went on to explain to Hausner that he had only told the story of his experiencing being whipped, of his suffering this terrible whipping, once before, soon after arriving as a survivor in the Holy Land. Speaking in Yiddish, he had told an Israeli couple what had occurred to him. The couple thought that Goldman, as an immigrant to Israel, did not speak Hebrew, but he did. And the young Goldman overheard the man tell his wife that he, the man, did not believe the story. Hearing the man say those words in Hebrew, Goldman said, was akin to being whipped for another time, an 81st whipping. Since then, he told Yad Vashem, he had told nobody his story. But now, because of this moment in the court brought about by Hausner, the audience did indeed believe Goldman, and a new bond, as we discussed yesterday, was formed between the Sabras and the survivors. And credit goes to the prosecutor. The scholar Yechiam Weitz correctly noted that, quote, Gideon Hausner realized his vision of the Eichmann trial in two ways. He recognized it as a unique, historic legal case whose contribution was a turning point in Jewish history and fundamental to Holocaust remembrance in Israel. Furthermore, he saw this event as the high point in his personal history, to which his name, prestige, and honor would be forever linked. The success of both visions cannot be denied, end quote. One of the most incredible photos of the trial captures Mickey Goldman sitting in the courtroom in his police uniform with the tattooed numbers clearly visible on his arm. There are many photographs of the trial that capture the uniqueness of these proceedings. We see a Nazi who had been appointed by Nazi Germany to effectuate what the Nazis called the final solution, suddenly brought to court in a Jewish state to be judged. These are images that highlight how the Nazis' quote-unquote final solution was not final at all. These are images that embody the endurance of the Jewish people. Many of the photographs of the trial captured how those that had suffered so severely during the Holocaust, those mourning murdered fathers and mothers, sons and daughters, brothers and sisters, suddenly were able in court to confront one of the engineers of this mass murder. Professor Ruth Weiss, in a 2018 article, put it this way, quote, the trial itself was without precedent or parallel. The Israeli poet Natan Alterman wrote that it would fill an eerie void that has been hidden somewhere in the soul of the Jewish people, in the history of its lives and deaths, ever since it went into exile. The void he referred to, Professor Weiss continued, could not have been filled previously, because the Jews had never been in a position to prosecute their murderers. Now they were. Given that this was the first and, as seemed likely, the only time that Jewish survivors would be able to confront one of the individuals responsible for the murder of their relatives, the event assumed outsized importance. End quote. To see this man, to see Adolf Eichmann stand in an Israeli courtroom with the menorah of the emblem of the State of Israel on the wall, to see this evil man stand to be tried in a court before Hebrew-speaking Jewish judges, all these images are striking. But it is also the image of Mickey Goldman in court, Mickey Goldman from whom we shall hear more tomorrow, that is truly a memorable photo from this period in Israeli history. Mickey Goldman, who suddenly felt and experienced the empathy of his brethren. Mickey Goldman, whose image that contains both the numbers of Auschwitz and the uniform of a Jewish state, truly proclaims that Am Yisrael Chai. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.